Nuketown Radioactive number 79 for Friday, June 18th, 2009. On this episode of Nuketown Radioactive, I start building my summer reading list. And yes, in spite of all this dreary rain and 60-degree weather that we've been getting in Pennsylvania, I do believe that summer is coming. I recruit players for my weekly Star Wars campaign, geek out about Origins 2009, and take a look at the games that have been consuming my free time this spring. Meanwhile, in Netheads, I come across a treasure trove of modules, campaign settings, and other resources for Dungeons & Dragons, and contemplate a Savage Worlds-powered Star Trek campaign. And that was Lucas.
Beware, my friends. Geek dads travel in packs. Here comes Ken Newquist with Nuketown Radioactive.
Welcome to Nuketown Radioactive, the occasional podcast about life, liberty, and the pursuit of geekdom. I am your host, Ken Newquist, and it's almost summer. Not that you would really know it from the weather around here in eastern Pennsylvania. It has been raining. I can't even tell you how long it's been raining for. It's been raining that long. It seems like we get like one day of sun, maybe 2 days of sun, and just enough to tease us, just enough to almost think, hey, wow, you know, maybe summer's really on its way. And then slam, we get hit with 60-degree weather and rain. That's pretty much what we've had for the last at least a week. We get thunderstorms rolling through, and it's just, wow, it's just been a crazy spring. You would not know to walk out my front door that it is actually almost summer in Pennsylvania. You would never think it was June. April, maybe. March, definitely. But wow, it has just been a wet, wet, wet spring. But that's okay, because summer is coming, and it has to warm up eventually, right? And because summer is on its way, I have been working on my summer reading list. I'm looking for suggestions for my reading list, and I've already got a couple that I've put together based on stuff I've just kind of been squirreling away over the last couple of months. Now, I have a thread up on Nuketown soliciting additional ideas, but some of the stuff that I've already got on hand, these are books that I've either just picked up to the bookstore or ordered from Amazon or whatever, but the books that I have available and ready to go over the next couple of weeks are Redemption Arc by Alistair Reynolds, which is the follow-up to his novel Revelation Space, which I believe I spoke about on an earlier edition of Radioactive. Revelation Space was a pretty good book. It got a little long-winded in the middle, but I enjoyed it. It was kind of the hard SF slash space opera that I've been looking for. Redemption Arc, I'm reading it right now, actually, and it's kind of been off to a slow start. It was supposed to be a sequel, but we don't really get into any of the sequel characters, or rather any of the characters from the original book, until, like, I don't know, 150, 200 pages in, when things start feeling familiar again. It wasn't so bad for me, because I actually read the short story that inspires the first 200 pages of this particular book, but it was kind of an accidental thing. I was reading through these first couple pages and going, you know what, this kind of seems familiar. And then as it went on, I realized, yeah, I really had read the I think it was maybe actually been classified as a novella that it's based on. I couldn't even tell you what the name of it was, but I know it's in one of the short fiction books that I've been reading over the last year or so. The next book I want to read is The Dreaming Void by Peter Hamilton. And this is a kind of sequel to Pandora's Star. It's set in the same universe, but a couple of centuries in the future. Again, a book that I talked about on an earlier edition of Radioactive. In fact, I think it may have been part of my summer reading list for 2008. In this book, there is a threat lurking at the center of our galaxy. We think that there is a giant black hole there. Turns out, not so much a black hole as a pocket universe. And this pocket universe is feeding on the rest of the galaxy in order to sustain itself. And it could destroy everything around it. And so this book is the story of how they deal with that, I guess. I don't know. I haven't actually read it yet, but it is sitting on the shelf and ready to go. Next up is going to be the space opera Renaissance, which is one of two space opera anthologies that I got for Christmas. I read the new space opera, which was the shorter of the two. As I think I may have mentioned before, the new space opera, it's kind of loosely space opera. I mean, there are certain themes that are there. Galactic empires, faster than light speed travel. But, you know, it's also equally could have been called the transhumanism or the new transhumanism, because a lot of it is about transforming people into other things and the next step of human evolution, which, you know, is fine. I'm cool with that. But at the same time, that's not really what I was looking for in a space opera book. So from what I understand, this new the space opera renaissance is a little bit more what I was looking for. The thing is I couldn't just dive into the space opera renaissance after having read an anthology, because frankly, I can only take so many short stories. So I'm going to read Redemption Arc, then I think I'm going to read The Dreaming Void, then I'm going to launch into space opera renaissance, and then I'm going to come back to another space opera novel called The Lost Fleet, Dauntless, by Jack Campbell, which I've been hearing a lot of good things about in analog science fiction. In fact, his books, I think there's a series of five of these books, keep showing up in the, Brass Tacks section of Analog. So heard good things about it. It kind of seems my speed. It reminds me a little bit of the Patrick O'Brien Master and Commander novels, only set in space. I don't know if that's a good analogy, but, you know, I'll let you know once I actually read the book. Let's see. I think there's a couple of others that folks have recommended, and their names escape me off the top of my head. But you can join the conversation by going to nuketown.com/books/readinglists/summer-2009-suggestions, or you can just follow the link in the show notes, which is probably easier than trying to do that whole URL. Now, when I'm not looking for new books, I'm looking for a new player for my Star Wars campaign. As longtime listeners probably know, I've had a gaming group for, I think it's about 12 years. Or is it 13 now? No, I guess it's 13 because I've had my gaming group for almost as long as I've been married. And we've got lives, we've got kids, we've got families and jobs and all that, and it can occasionally interfere with our gaming schedules. So what we've been finding is that we've been getting, you know, 4 to 5 people a week, which isn't bad, but the problem is that on the weeks where we don't have one of those standbys, and then we may not have enough to actually run a game. You know, we fall into having maybe 3 people around, and you know, it's okay. We can play a little World of Warcraft instead, or maybe some board games and stuff. But it would be really nice to have another player just to kind of, you know, pad our weekly game and make sure that the game is always going to be able to go off. So, if you're interested in joining us, you can drop me an email. My email address is nuketown@gmail.com. The short and sweet version of our campaign is this. We're running a Knights of the Old Republic campaign set in the days just before the Mandalorian Wars. We're using the Star Wars Saga Edition rules, which are the latest and greatest, and I truly mean latest and greatest, versions of the Star Wars D20 rules. And basically our idea with the campaign is we start off in the era just before the Mandalorian Wars. The Old Republic has just about rebuilt itself after the Great Sith War. And we're going to kind of move the campaign along through the different time periods that are covered in the Knights of the Old Republic era. So we're going to go into the Mandalorian Wars, and the characters are going to have to, you know, decide how they want to react to that. The Jedi are going to decide whether they want to be pacifists and sit out the war, or if they want to follow Malak and Revan and go to war against the Mandalorians to defend the Republic. Then we're going to go into the Jedi Civil War era, and they're going to have to pick sides. Are they going to fight alongside the Sith, who have a legitimate complaint against the Jedi, who, you know, didn't take action against the Mandalorians, or do they fight for the Jedi and the Old Republic? And then we'll see how it goes. Those are the three big eras we want to get into. I don't know if we're going to get into the the Dark Wars, the time period covered by the Knights of the Old Republic too. But I'm jazzed. The campaign's been going really good in spite of our occasional attendance issues. I think we're about 15 sessions in, and I've just really been having a blast with it. And the guys are really enjoying it too. I think we've had pretty much nothing but fun with this one. So, you know, we're looking for new players. If you're interested and you're in the Lehigh Valley, let us know. Now, the other big gaming news that I have is actually there's a lot of gaming news that I have in this particular podcast, but the next big thing that's happening is that I'm going to Origins 2009, which is a huge gaming convention held in Columbus, Ohio, and it's going to be held in the I guess it's the last week of June, 25th through the 29th or something like that. I'm not sure the exact dates off my head. All I know is I'm getting on a plane next Wednesday. I'm going to be playing Star Wars, Spirit of the Century, Call of Cthulhu, the Battlestar Galactica board game, Settlers of Catan, and Arkham Horror, and I'm hoping to find a Savage Worlds game to join in as well. If you want to know more about Origins, you can check it out at www.originsgamefair.com, and I gotta say that I'm really looking forward to it. I've been looking forward to it more and more as we go along, just because I'm going to be able to play with a bunch of blogging and podcasting friends, which is always cool. A contingent of my gaming group is going. I think we have 5 people from my gaming group going, which is just really, really cool because we always have fun when we go to these things together. And you know, it's just, wow, I've never been to Origins. I've been to Gen Con a couple of times, but Origins is the other big game fair that I just really haven't been to. So this is an awesome opportunity, and I'm just really looking forward to it. Have I said that I'm looking forward to it? Because I'm really looking forward to it. Now, the last gaming stuff I wanted to talk about was, you know, just kind of the stuff I've been reviewing lately for the Xbox at scifiwire.com. It's been a busy spring. I didn't realize quite how busy until I sat down and started pulling together the review links for the show notes. I have reviewed 4 games in the last couple of weeks. The first one is Demigod, which is probably the first Windows PC game that I have reviewed in like 5 years. I couldn't even tell you the last time I reviewed one. I think it was probably Galactic Empires by Stardock. And, wow, that's really going pretty far back. Demigod, also by Stardock. And it's a multiplayer-only game. You can play it single-player, but then you're just going against multiplayer AI. And basically you're taking on the role of this demigod and going around and fighting other demigods. The cool thing about it is it's a little bit like Diablo meets Age of Empires. But the cool thing is that you only have to worry about building up your character and maybe making a few technological enhancements that improve your defensive buildings and such within the game. You don't have to micromanage armies. You don't have to micromanage resources. You can just kind of focus on your demigod and go to war. So as a kind of real-time strategy fix, it works pretty good. I'm looking forward to StarCraft 2, and as I said in my review, this is a good way to kind of bide your time until StarCraft 2 comes out. Bionic Commando is a sequel to the 1980s swinging, shooting Bionics game, in which you play, well, a Bionics Commando fighting various fascist enemies. This is totally updated. It's not Bionic Commando Rearmed, which was actually a remake of Bionic Commando that came out for Xbox 360 not too long ago on their Xbox Live component. This is all new, all next gen. It's a third person over the shoulder perspective, and basically you're just jumping around this map, latching onto things with your bionic arm, which is kind of like this huge tentacle thing that shoots out. And I liked it. I didn't know what I was going to think of it kind of going in to the game, just because I never played the original Bionic Commando back in the 80s. I didn't have an NES, so I really didn't know what I was getting myself into. I tried Bionic Commando Rearmed just to get a feel for the old gameplay, and I gotta say, this was fun. You can use your bionics to pick up cars and throw them. You can use your extendo arm to just kind of swing all around the map. And the coolest thing that I can say about it is that you have this grapple, and in a lot of grappling games, you can only latch onto certain things. You know, there's only certain areas that you're allowed to attach to. And in this game, almost everything is attachable, which is just really cool because you don't have to worry about just lining everything up perfectly. You still have to time your swings right if you just kind of want to go from one thing to the next in the city without touching the ground. But you don't have to try and go, okay, I'm going to line up my grapple and shoot. It felt very organic, and it just felt good. Now, I have to say that the final chapter of this game kind of sucked. The big reveal was kind of, well, gross. But the rest of the game, I enjoyed. It's the first game that I've completed in a really long time, so that says something. Now, a game that I can recommend that you don't buy is Damnation, which is a steampunk western that came out, I think, earlier in May, and wow, this just was an awkward game. They tried to do too much. They tried to be really revolutionary, and what they were trying to do was come up with like this vertical jumping shooting game. So think of Lara Croft Tomb Raider, and you know, being able to run and jump and work your way up through these levels all at the same time. And to be honest, I mean, it really wasn't all that new. Tomb Raider did it before, did it better. And didn't cause me to want to throw up while I was playing it, which was probably the single biggest drawback to Damnation, aside from its substandard AI and really awkward vehicle cutscenes and minigames. So avoid it. Don't buy it. You might be tempted by the steampunk, but you know what? Just go get Deadlands Reloaded, which is a role-playing game for Savage Worlds. And even if you don't play the game, you'll still have a hell of a lot more fun reading the setting material. Now, the last game that I reviewed was Ghostbusters, which is, well, it's Ghostbusters, man, which is the best thing I can say about it. It is like a true incarnation of the Ghostbusters. This isn't, it's even truer to Ghostbusters than Ghostbusters 2 was, if you can believe that. Ghostbusters 2 was not my favorite movie sequel of all time, and I still greatly prefer the original movie. And this game really was just loyal to that original movie. I mean, it touches back on the original movie. You go back to some of the same locations that you had in the original movie, but, you know, it's not overly derivative. It's not just, oh, here you are fighting the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. There's a reason for you to be fighting the Stay Puft Marshmallow again. And it's not just a cheap trick. It actually plays into the larger story. And that larger story extends the original mythology of Ghostbusters and kind of explains some stuff that was happening in the original movie without, you know, supplanting anything that was in the original movie, or making it feel kind of artificial and contrived. It just felt like a natural extension of the whole franchise. And honestly, it made me very excited for what we might see in a Ghostbusters 3, which apparently Ivan Reitman is talking about making. So if you love the Ghostbusters, I would wholeheartedly recommend getting this game for the Xbox 360 or the PlayStation 3. If you have a Wii and you're thinking about getting it, I would rent it first. The control system for the Wii is different. I found it to be a little awkward, and to be honest, the graphics just aren't up to par with the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3. If you don't care about that, if you're cool with the more cartoony graphical look that the Wii version has, you know, all the better for you. But I would definitely recommend renting it first before you buy.
Jane, I'm a hankering for some exciting stories. You know where I can rustle up some?
Of course I do. See that button right there?
Yep, sure do. But Jane, isn't that the ignition button for the ship?
Why, sure it is. That's because it will ignite Raygun Radio Podcast into these here speakers. Then you can listen to some good space stories and get the inside scoop with the authors. Not to mention some good music. But not the kind we listen to back home.
Are you right sure, Jane? I don't reckon those hombres over in that there control tower will be none too happy if we take off.
Dan, are you a scaredy cat? Then let me...
What's that noise? Sounds sort of spacey.
I'm not sure.
Listen to Raygun Radio, broadcast from the space station Selene, orbiting Titan. Tune your internet connection to www.raygunradio.com, and we'll beam you good space opera stories, interviews with the authors and music, as well as plain fun. You'll be space happy that you did.
So, given that I've been on a huge space opera kick, it should be of no surprise to anyone that I really enjoyed the new Star Trek movie. Part reboot, part prequel, part sequel, the movie just felt like an awesome space opera movie. I mean, this is the movie I've been waiting, I don't know, 5-10 years. How long has it been since Galaxy Quest came out? I think that's the last really good space opera kind of movie that I saw and enjoyed. It's just good stuff. you know, it had action, it had humor, great visual effects. Yes, the occasional lens flare that just didn't quite fit. But aside from that, it was great. I really enjoyed it. And I'm working on a review of it for Nuketown so that I can tell you exactly why I enjoyed it. But in any case, it kind of got me thinking about what role-playing game resources there might be out there for Star Trek. I know that there have been the Decipher and Last Unicorn versions of the official Star Trek role-playing game. I picked them up and they just seemed way too rules-heavy for me. It just seemed like a really, well, not the kind of adventure-type Star Trek that I would want to run were I going to run Star Trek. But in watching the new Star Trek movie, I had to think Savage Worlds would be perfect for this. You know, Savage Worlds is a very small role-playing game. I don't even remember exactly how many pages the Explorer's Edition is, but, you know, it's this nice compact game, and I think you could just layer in just enough sci-fi to make it perfect for Star Trek and to give you that kind of fast, fun, and furious action that you see in the movie. So you can have great fist fights and brawls on the decks of starships and, you know, blasting away at interstellar starships and such. And so it got me thinking about, okay, well, what's out there for Savage Worlds and Star Trek? Which led me to Savage Star Trek, which you can find at rennie.wikispaces.com/st+home. This is a hopefully growing wiki page that includes alien races, gear and starships, as well as some basic rules for running a Savage World Star Trek game, which I thought was pretty darn nifty. Now, on a related note, Uncle Bear has been guest blogging over at Vulcan Steve's blog, and he's been thinking about Star Trek since, you know, Vulcan Steve is a big a big Star Trek fan. It seemed only appropriate that if you're going to guest blog over at his place, you'd want to talk about Star Trek. So what does he talk about? Well, he talks about running a campaign. Now, he does talk about doing this runabout style, which, well, at least that's how I would describe it. So the idea of having a small starship that you can use to travel between worlds instead of doing the huge, big Constitution-class starship. He also talks about starship combat made easy and world building 101 specifically for Star Trek. And I think this is all pretty good advice for starting up a game. I gotta say that I tend to disagree with Baron on how to run a Star Trek campaign, or at least how I would run a Star Trek campaign. I'm thinking more along the lines of big ships. I want my my players to be officers within that ship, or at least have positions of authority, because I think part of the fun of running a Star Trek game would be able to, you know, be in charge of a ship. Maybe not the captain, but certainly first officers and you know, maybe that second in line command crew, as it were. And my particular thought, and I need to sit down and kind of congeal all these thoughts to submit to Vulcan Steve, but my thought on this is that if you took the Pirates of the Spanish Main rules and mashed them up with core Savage Worlds rules and then throw some sci-fi in there, you've got the perfect Star Trek for me. The big capital ship slugging it out. You know, well, that kind of sounds a little bit like the pirate ships that you would have in Pirates of the Spanish Main. The reputation rules from Pirates of the Spanish Main. The ship combat rules from Pirates of the Spanish Main, which are all built around having different stations and being able to influence the way that the fight goes. I think it's kind of logical just to transfer it over to Star Trek, at least my vision of, you know, your Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan, and Star Trek VI, The Voyage Home, which were very nautical in their make and design. So I would head over to Vulcan Steve's website at Vulcan, S-T-E-V, .wordpress.com, and of course there'll be a link in the show notes. Now, turning away from Star Trek for a little while, I do want to talk about another find that I had that came to me from Twitter. I don't remember exactly who tweeted this, but I had to bookmark it because it was pretty cool. Now, I've actually ventured back to this page a couple of times, and I think I found it for a Summon Webscryer column many, many years ago for Knights of the Dinner Table, but man, what a treasure trove this was. It's the previous editions archive on the Wizards of the Coast website for Dungeons & Dragons. Now, I don't know how long this thing is going to be there, and I'm not going to try and recite the URL because it's kind of long and convoluted, as WotC's URLs tend to be. But you can get to it from the show notes, and man, this is just an awesome, well, treasure trove. I mean, it's just fantastic. There's a whole bunch of classic Realms modules there. That would be the Forgotten Realms. So we've got the Fall of Mithranor, various Volos guides, the City of Ravensbluff, Elminster Ecologies, and I think, I don't know, there were like 20 or 30 other PDFs that you could download from there. They had classic modules like Dungeon Land and the Land Beyond the Magic Mirror, Palace of the Silver Princess, The Secret of Bone Hill, which is the first Advanced Dungeons & Dragons module I ever owned. It also has material kill for Birthright, Dark Sun, Dragonlance, Greyhawk, and the Greyhawk stuff is Ivid the Undying, which is probably my favorite unpublished supplement of all time. I still have the printouts of the thing that I made on my dot matrix printer when I was in high school. It's like a 400-page supplement that WotC never released. TSR never released, because it was supposed to be this great, huge box set, and nothing ever came of it. So, fantastic stuff. Stuff you really have to go and download. I've already snagged some of it, but I would recommend going there, grabbing this stuff, and just having it around in case Wizards changes their minds and decides to take down the site.
This woman like bees, Sarge. I don't think we're going to make it.
Damn it, Bukowski. Keep your head together. We're going to win that hill if it's the last thing we do.
Sorry, Sarge. I just don't know what to do.
What? Why not? Did you listen to the Accidental Survivors podcast?
You mean the podcast about modern tabletop role-playing games and related media topics?
Yeah, the one put together by the Swords Edge publishing guys.
Sorry, Sarge, I didn't!
Sorry I'm late, I was listening to the Accidental Survivors podcast, and then I went and sabotaged the lines.
Logan, you beautiful bastard!
Let's go take that hill, men.
The Accidental Survivors podcast, a podcast about modern tabletop role-playing systems and related topics. Visit us at the web at accidentalsurvivors.libsyn.com.
Give my daughter a call sometime, Logan.
So that'll do it for this edition of Nuketown Radioactive. I don't really know when the next episode's going to come out because Origins is looming large, and I don't intend on sleeping much at it. I'm going to drink way too much Mountain Dew, and I'm going to drink way too much coffee, and I'm going to have a huge amount of fun playing with my friends. And I'm not going to regret a minute of it. that said, it may take me a week or two to recover from Origins because I plan on having that much fun. So who knows when the next show is going to come out. In the meantime, I will be looking for suggestions for my summer reading list. You can send them to me at nuketown@gmail.com. And again, I am looking for folks for my Star Wars campaign. If you want to join us, email me at nuketown@gmail.com, and I'll let you know what the details are. And finally, if you just want to keep up with what I'm doing in my geeky gaming life, you can follow me on Twitter. My username there is NukeHavoc, and the web address for Twitter is www.twitter.com.